Once upon a time, in an age of forests and firelights, our ancestors were wise to the spectrum of human identity. Among the fairy tales and myths they told were stories of glass coffins and marble statues, eunuchs and androgynes, chaste marriages and bodily transformations, symbolic stories that hint at other identities, tales of asexuality. This is the Asexual Fairy Tales Podcast, and I'm your storyteller, Elizabeth Hopkinson. Each month, I'll be reading you another story from my books of asexual fairy tales. Some of these are old tales of myth and legend, in which I first found representation for my asexual identity. Others are original stories by me, based on traditional motifs. It's a personal selection, but I hope you find something in it that speaks to you too. So, sit back, if you are able, relax, and enjoy another asexual fairy tale. Hello and welcome back to Asexual Fairy Tales to all my old and new listeners. I'm recording this episode during Ace Week, at the end of October, and it seemed a very good time to bring out the werewolf story from my collection, The Story of Bisclavet. But before we go into that, I'd just like to remind you that if you support me on Ko-fi for any amount, either a one-time gift or a monthly donation, you get access to an exclusive asexual fairy tale not found in any of the books. And the link to that comes at the end of each episode. But on to this month's episode, which is The Story of Bisclavet. It's one of my favourite stories in the world, and it's found in the Lays of Marie de France, who flourished from about 1160 to 1215. She was a French woman in the English court, and this is a book of ballad-like poems from Brittany telling tales of knights and ladies. They are sort of fairy tales for grown-ups, and when I was given these to read at university, it was the first time I realised that fairy tales were for grown-ups and not just for children. Bisclavet is not necessarily an asexual story, although it is the tale of a man who forsakes his wife's bed and is seen by her as less than human. It's a coming-out tale, I think, and in some ways it resembles The Half-Marble Prince, which you can listen to in an earlier episode. In Bisclavet, it's a tale of someone who's not accepted in his original home, but finds a new home and family in what could be read as a homoromantic relationship. I've used Bisclavet on a number of occasions in workshops to discuss issues like guilty secrets and silent victims and the need to confront these issues. And when it comes to accepting and revealing one's true identity, I believe the tale of Bisclavet has much to teach us. In Brittany, there was once a baron named Bisclavet. To look at him, you would think he had everything he could wish for. Riches, prowess, handsome looks, a beautiful wife, and the favour of the king. But looks can be deceiving. Within the castle walls, relationships between Bisclavet and his wife were not happy. For some time now, Bisclavet had forsaken his wife's bed, and three nights out of every seven he was nowhere to be found. This made the wife deeply suspicious as well as frustrated. At last she decided to confront her husband. "If I ask you a question, will you answer me?" she said. Bisclavet gently embraced his wife. "Of course. Ask away, dear heart. Tell me where it is you go those nights you are away from me. I am afraid of your answer, yet I must know." Bisclavet turned pale. "Do not ask me that, my lady, anything but that." "So it is as I feared. You have a lover," the wife said. "No," Bisclavet scowled. "Believe me, that is quite impossible." "Then why do you not come to my bed? You are lying," the wife said. However much Bisclavet pleaded with her, she insisted all the more strongly that he reveal the secret. In the end, Bisclavet could not refuse. He drew a deep breath. "Lady, I become a werewolf. The wife's eyes widened. Her veil quivered about the edges. "It's true," Biscovay said. "I become a werewolf and live in the deepest part of the forest, where I live off the small beasts I kill." The wife was horrified. "And when you are a werewolf," she swallowed, "do you go about the forest clothed or naked?" "Lady," Biscovay looked down, "I go about completely naked." The wife was disgusted. The thought of her husband, a respectable baron, going about the woods naked like a wild beast, it made her sick. "And where do you put your clothes while you are engaged in this activity?" "That I cannot tell you," Biscovay said, "for if my clothes were to be discovered and removed, I would never be able to change back into a man. I would be forced to remain a wolf for ever." But the wife would not let the matter rest. She pleaded and insisted until Biscovay was forced to tell her. "There is a ruined chapel just off the forest path. Inside it is a hollowed-out stone. I leave my clothes there." The wife questioned no more after this, but her heart towards Biscovay was utterly changed. Before, she had been proud to have such a respected man for a husband. Now she was covered with shame. She thought of a neighbouring knight who was always flirting with her. Many a time she'd imagined his strong hands against her body. He was a real man, not like a freak of a husband. He would help her escape this humiliation. Secretly, she sent him a message. "I know you have always desired me. If you help me in this matter, I am yours, body and soul." She told him of the chapel and the hidden clothes. The next time Biscovay was away, he removed the clothes that would have made Biscovay a man again. Since Biscovay was away from home so often, no one worried at first. When he did not return, folk began to question whether he had gone away for good. For a time people searched and inquired after him, but nothing was ever heard. So no one complained when the neighbouring wife moved in with Biscovay's former wife and became her new husband. For surely she was now a widow, they said. But Biscovay was not dead. He was living the life of a wolf deep in the forest. No one saw or heard from him for a full year when the king decided to go hunting. The hounds took the scent of an unusual beast, which the king and his court pursued until late in the day. Eventually, they held the beast at bay. The huntsman would have released the hounds and torn the beast to pieces. But to their astonishment, it ran up to the king's horse, took hold of the stirrup and kissed the king's foot. Human tears spilled from its eyes. "Hold off the dogs," cried the king. "This is an intelligent beast. Look, it pleads for mercy." The lords and huntsmen gathered around and saw that it was true. "I will hunt no more today," said the king. "I will take this beast home to my castle and place it under my protection." From that day, the king kept Biscovay as a pet. No one was allowed to hit or hurt him. All the lords and ladies were happy to stroke him. He was friendly and gentle, even to the smallest children. At night he would sleep, curled up at the king's feet. Anywhere the king went, Biscovay would go too. He would whine and cry if it looked like he would be left behind. "And you could leave such a good boy," the king would say, patting Biscovay's fluffy head. Sometime later the king celebrated a festival. All his knights and barons were required to attend court. Among those who came was a knight who had married Biscovay's wife and taken his lands. He never suspected the man he had wronged was so close by, in the form of the wolf-like dog by the king's feet. But Biscovay knew the man instantly. The hackles rose on his back and he began to growl. With a hideous snarl he hurled himself at the knight, bringing him to the ground. The king had to threaten Biscovay with a stick before he would release the man. Twice more that day, Biscovay tried to bite the man. The servants had to take him to the kitchen and tie him up until the feast was over. "I don't understand it," the king said. "He's normally so gentle." He thought for a while. "Maybe you look like someone who harmed him before."
"Maybe," said the knight reluctantly. "But it wasn't me. I never saw the beast before."
Needless to say, when the feast was over, this knight was the very first to leave. He couldn't wait to get back home. More time passed, and the king made a progress of his lands. One of the places he stopped was the forest region where he'd gone hunting and first discovered Bisclavae. When Bisclavae's ex-wife heard that the king was in the neighbourhood, she put on her finest clothes and set out to present him with an expensive gift. Since her husband had made such a fool of himself at the festival, incompetent man, it was up to her to set things right. The moment she came into the king's presence, Bisclavae leapt through the air with a snarl. Before anyone could stop him, he'd bitten the nose clean off the lady's face. What a commotion. The whole court was in uproar. Servants and surgeons, knights and ladies, everyone was clamouring for the king's attention. "You must have him put down. I demand it," the wife hollered. "Madam, will you keep still while I dress your wounds?" the surgeon said. "If Fluffy bit you, it's your fault," said the king. "I'd sooner die than have him put down." "Diplomacy, your majesty, please," begged the Lord Chancellor. At last, an old and very wise courtier called for silence. "Your majesty," he said, "this beast has lived with you a long time, and every single one of us has been with him at close quarters. During all this time he has been gentle and docile. The only people he has ever attacked are this lady and her husband. Can that be a coincidence?" He approached the king and lowered his voice. "This is the wife of your Baron Bisclavae, who disappeared in mysterious circumstances. I do not trust her, my liege." So the king had the wife taken away for questioning, and whatever form that questioning took, it soon got her to confess. She revealed the truth about her former husband, how she had betrayed him and taken his clothes, what had become of him, and where he went. As Bisclavae had not been seen since his transformation, she was sure he and the beast were one and the same. When the king heard this, he was astonished and horrified. "Seek out this chapel and find Bisclavae's clothes immediately," he said. Riders were dispatched and soon returned with the clothes, but when they were placed before Bisclavae, he could not even look at them. Then the wise man spoke up once more. "Your majesty, you're not doing this properly. Put yourself in Bisclavae's position. Think of the embarrassment and humiliation it would bring him to have everyone watch his transformation. Now, why not do as I suggest? Take Bisclavae into your bedchamber, bring in the clothes, and shut the door behind him. Give him time. It's the least you can do." "Of course, you're right," said the king. He did as the wise old man suggested and waited outside the door for a decent length of time. Then he opened the door. Bisclavae was sleeping on the king's bed, fully clothed and human once more. With a cry of joy, the king ran to embrace his friend and kissed him many times. "Bisclavae, what a happy day this is!" The king wasted no time in restoring to Bisclavae his land and titles. However, Bisclavae chose to spend his time at court. There he could be close to his friend the king, who loved him so dearly. The wicked wife and her knight were banished from the kingdom of Brittany forever. And if you will believe it, the descendants of that pair have all been born without noses to this very day. Thank you for listening to Asexual Fairy Tales. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing to the podcast. If you really enjoyed it and want to buy me a coffee, you can do that at ko-fi.com/ElizabethHopkinson48513. Don't forget you can follow me on Twitter at hidden_grove, or go to my website, elizabethhopkinson.uk, where you'll find links to all my books. All the links are in the episode description. I really appreciate all your support. Stay safe and keep reading.